I'm pulling out my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for the drive to work. Okay, so today I'm going to talk about the dynamics of designing in a team. So one of the things that is interesting about Magic Design is it's not made by one person. I mean, obviously Richard made the game in the very beginning, but even then he had a lot of playtesters, a lot of people he worked with. But nowadays, beyond the creation of the game, every time we design Magic, it is not done by a single person. It is done by a team of people. And it's not only done by a team of people, at some point in the process, that team of people passes it over to a different team of people. So the idea is, you know, we'll have an explorer design team, and then it goes to a vision design team, and that, while there's overlap between those, they're different people. Then it goes to a set design team, and the lead of the exploratory and vision sometimes is the same, but the lead of the vision and set almost never the same. So it's changing to somebody different. And then play design is also, again, somebody different. So the idea that making Magic is an act of group design, not an act of singular design. So today I wanted to sort of talk about what is the nature of group design, how does it differ from individual design, and then talk about, once we understand the nature of that, how does it impact how you do it? Okay, so first let's talk about I have a nice vantage point, which is prior to working at Wizards, I was a writer. And while I did do, like, you know, I worked in a sitcom room, that's a group experience where you're bouncing ideas off one another. So not all writing is solitary, but before that, I wrote a lot of scripts, and writing scripts usually is a solitary thing, meaning that when I was writing a script, I had sole say in what happened. I had every decision. I was the creative force of my scripts. Nobody else was telling me what I could or couldn't do. Now, obviously, I was writing for a certain medium, and not that there aren't restrictions outside of the individual person, but the point, though, is I had freedom to do what I wanted. That if I wanted some character on page 93 to do something, well, they would do it, because I was the sole, you know, creative force in making that script. But in Magic is not made by a single person. No single element of it really is made by one person. That it's a group effort. Okay, so what is the advantage of sort of solo design, and what is the advantage of group design? I think the biggest advantage of solo design is there's sort of perfect communication, right? That you know what you want. Or at least, you know, even if you're, like, sometimes when you're working on something, you might know exactly what you want, but at least you have a sense of what you want. And that whatever vision you have, look, everybody working on the project gets the vision because it's you. You communicate to yourself just fine. So the big strength about solo design is there's a purity of understanding that everybody working on the project, which is you, is all aligned, and you know exactly what you want. And because it's just one person, there's seamless communication. That, you know, there's not a need or a desire to do that. And we'll get into today when you get to teams, if not so. But that's probably the biggest strength of an individual solo design, is there's a clarity. There's an absolute understanding of what is going on. The downside of solo design is that there's just one person. You know, you have blind spots. You have weaknesses. You know, you as an individual, you're not good at everything. And so, you know, the things you're good at, you will excel at. But the things you're bad at, well, you'll do the best you can. But, you know, now, sometimes in solo design, you might get help from other people. For example, let's say I was writing a script on a material that I didn't know that well. You know, I would need to do some research. I would talk to people, you know. Maybe I even have somebody who, when I have a question, I can call them up and say, oh, you know, a very common thing is a consultant. Okay, I'm doing something in an area I'm not super familiar with. Okay, I call the consultant and say, here's what I want to do. What thing actually makes sense for this topic? And they go, oh, you know, here's what you want to do. So even in a solo endeavor, you can reach out to sort of help get expertise. But that expertise is not built into the system. That there are inherent weaknesses that you, the individual, have. And it's not a knock against individuals. All individuals have strengths and weaknesses. So the advantage of a team design is that you have access to a lot more different strengths and tools, and you know that you have more people that are capable of doing more things. In fact, one of the reasons magic design is done by team, A, it's a lot of work for one person, but B, there's so many different aspects to magic that no one person is good at them all. For example, I've gotten very good at the area of design that I do. And it's not that I can't do some, if I had to do set design, I could do set design. I'm not as good as other people at set design. I'm not horrible at set design. But I mean, a lot of the skills that come with set design, I have less practice at. I'm not as established at those. And then you get to play design. It's like, I might be better than random average player at play design, but I'm nowhere near as good as the play designers at play design. So I have some experience, and it's not that, I definitely could do play design better than random person, but I can't do it better than someone that's good at it, and so the idea is, because we have lots of different people, that we get to play to strengths. The person that's very good at thing X does thing X. And the idea that you have different people doing different things, like one of the things that's really fun about team design in general is that everything isn't relying on you. That if you don't have a good idea, well, somebody else might have a good idea. There's a lot of pressure in solo design where it's all up to you. Now, like I said, there's some fun of solo design. It's kind of cool that you get to design everything. One of the frustrations in teams is you don't get to decide everything. And sometimes you really want something, but the group at large wants something different. That's another big difference between solo design and group design. In solo design, you, the solo designer, have total say. Whatever you want is what goes. In team design, no one person has say on everything. Some people have more say in certain aspects, and there are definitely people that have definitive final say on certain aspects. But the reality is, let's say I'm working on a team and I want to do something, but the rest of my team does not want to do it. There's most likely, if I don't get my team on board, I'm not going to do it. And even if my team agrees to something, the next team we pass it over, if they don't like it, they could take it out. So the nature of the magic process, and the reason that we do what we do, the reason you have multiple eyes on things and multiple leads, is we want to make sure that everything is as tested as possible. And like I said, one of the weaknesses of a solo design is the idea of weak spots, right? For example, let's say you're making something and you start your design in a certain place. And then as the design evolves over time, you move and change things. But there's some element of the design that's very core to where it started. And you, as the person who started it, is very emotionally tied to that thing. And so sometimes you have things that linger just because you make associations with it and it feels right to you. But with a fresh set of eyes comes along and goes, okay, why is this here? Does this add to anything? And that fresh set of eyes really has the ability to not have that emotional connection in a positive way. So one of the things in general about design is to be creative, to make things, there is an emotional connection that comes. If you are not attached emotionally to the things you are making, you are not doing your best work. That there is a lot of putting yourself, a lot of ego, part of creating something is really investing part of you in it. And that's a very emotional thing. There's nothing wrong with that. I think that you end up making things that really mean something and matter. But the downside of that is it can color your perception. It can blind you to certain things. And having multiple people look at it and oversee it really allows sort of a clarity, allows you to sort of make sure that everything is truly serving what it needs to do, and that it helps check biases. Maybe that's the better thing. That a team helps check against biases to make sure that you're doing things for the right reason and not because, it's not a carryover for something that doesn't matter anymore. That's a real common design problem, where something matters, you build around it, that thing goes away, it doesn't matter anymore, but remnants of it still stick around, and you have fondness to those remnants, and maybe they're not fulfilling the purpose like they once did. Okay, so what I want to do now is talk through I'm running a team. How do I play into the strengths of the team? And how do I help work against the weaknesses of a team? So a lot of team design is that element of, okay, how do I play into the strengths? How do I help play, you know, against the weaknesses, help against the weaknesses? So first, let's start with the strengths. The strengths of team design is that you get to play to lots of individuals' best abilities. So one of the things you want to do in a team that's very valuable is understand who on your team is the best at doing the things you need to do. I will just use vision design since this is what I do all the time. So one of the things we do on vision design is we definitely have roles for the team members, meaning that when we put the team together, we specifically make sure that certain skill sets are on the team. For example, I'm the lead of the team. I'm going to make decisions when I'm the vision lead. I want a strong second. I want somebody that is able to sort of do all the, keep the file in check and do notes and all the process stuff that needs to happen. Normally that person, the strong second, is somebody who we're training, because being a strong second is the best thing you can do to learn how to be a lead before actually being a lead. And it is nice in that it gives you a lot of responsibility without a lot of pressure. That when something goes wrong, the lead designer is the one that everyone focuses on. The strong second is not. But for example, especially on my teams, I give the strong second a lot of responsibility. You know, I really want them to take ownership. You know, normally I give them, you know, pretty full ownership of the file. I'll give them notes of things I care about, but the reality is I let them make final calls on the file so they can adjust the file. And there's a lot of busy work in the file. They get to own that, you know. And another part of this, by the way, is part of my corollary of this is not only does everyone have their roles, but you want to make sure that people, you allow them the ownership of the role, give them the responsibility of the role. But we'll get to more on that in a second. So the strong second, for example, is somebody who's training and learning, but it's somebody who has enough chops that they can, you know, we believe they're capable of doing this. That's why you make them strong second. Normally I want a couple people that I think are just strong. I call them fire hydrants, that they just pump out design. You just want a few people that are just really good at just mass design, meaning, you know, they're good designers, they have strong skills, and they can just design a lot of stuff. That one of the things you really want on a vision design team is just people that are can just pump out designs. And you normally want a couple of those. Then you want a play designer. You want someone whose expertise is balance. You want someone who can cost the card. So when we make a card set before each play test, you want someone that's going to look at over all the cards and just do a sanity check. Make sure that we don't have costs that are going to like disrupt the play test. In general, in a play test, costs don't need to be perfect, but you don't want to disrupt the play test because there's a lot of data loss. What do we learn today? Well, that one card's too good. That's not supposed to be the lesson of a play test. So you want someone to do a sanity check. So that's the play designer. And when you're in the room and you're trying to cost off, that's the person you turn to. You also want somebody that represents the creative team. Usually there's a liaison. And so you want somebody there that when you're making decisions, you can bounce off, are there decisions the creative team are making, or just make sure there's an understanding. And there's a lot of back and forth between design and creative. So having someone there in the room is super helpful. Usually the creative team finds it, just understanding what's going on in the design also is very helpful for the creative. So there's a back and forth. But if you're making creative decisions, hey, you have a creative person in the room. If you need to name a card or figure out a creature type that's not, mechanic dependent, you have somebody there that can do that. And so you normally want a creative person. And those are the major roles, for example, in vision design. You want the lead, the second. You want people that are capable of pumping out designs. You want a play designer. You want a creative representative. Now, when you get to later teams, what you need is different. Not all teams are exactly the same. So here's the key. You want to understand what your team needs. What are the skills you're going to need? In order to do what you need to do, what are the skills you're going to need? And then make sure that you have people that fill those skills. And the reason that's stronger than solo design is usually, if I want to find If I want to find someone who's good at all the things I just named, not that there's no people that could do that, but nobody's, you know, somebody is always better at something than others. You know, I'm really good at pouring out designs. I'm good at leading sets. Play design, not my thing. You know, I have some chops with creative. I've just done a lot of interacting with them, but not as strong as the creative member's going to have. And a lot of the creative stuff I've done was many, many years ago. Like, I've done card concepting, I've done art descriptions, but it's been a while, and magic's evolved a lot since then. So the reality is, hey, there's some skills I have, and I can do some of it. Some of it, like play design, I'm not even good at. You know, I'm not great at balance. And I'm particularly bad at balancing things in which there's nothing to judge against. Yeah, if we're making a kicker spell, I can look at other kicker spells, and I can make an educated guess by looking at what we've done before. But when we're playing in space that I haven't done before, I don't know. So the key is you want to make sure that your team, that you have roles for your team members. You want to make sure that those team members know their roles. And then you want to make sure you give them ownership of that role. Okay, you're my play designer. Your job is to cost cards. Whenever there's a card to be costed, you're the person I go to. You're the person responsible. You know, and then that person feels like, okay, I got to do my job. This is my job. I have to do this. And that one of the things that really plays well in teams is if everybody knows their role and knows, you know, and the roles play to their strengths, you have something that's greater than the sum of its parts. That a team working all together in, you know, in harmony just has more strength than an individual. Okay, so that you definitely want to make sure that everyone knows their role, knows their place. The other thing that you want to do is make sure to delegate. Make sure, like, you, the person running the team, cannot and should not do everything. The people there aren't, like, what makes a good team is that you're using the team as a team. That the team as a whole is designing the set. Not that you're designing the set and they're helping you. It is important, and this is something that's really key to running a team, is that it's important that the team feel, and they should feel this because it is true, that the team is designing. It is not you, the lead designer, designing. It's everybody designing. And, I mean, one of the roles of the lead of the set is you're going to push the team in directions. You're going to give the team goals to accomplish, you know, you are going to guide the team. That's your role. But you're not making all the decisions. Now, there are some decisions that need to get made. I mean, for example, sometimes, like in the end, the lead is going to make the final call on things. But that final call should come from the team getting to a place. And that's another really important part of having a team, that you want the whole team to see that the design is a group effort, that all of their inputs affected what the design was. And for example, one of the things I've learned is, let's say I have a lead, have a really good idea where we want to go. It's important not that we just go in that direction, but that I get the team on board in going in that direction. That I sort of pick the issues that matter, go through them, get the team to weigh in on them, and then make sure that, you know, like, a lot of times, for example, you know, because I've been doing this forever, I have a good sense where design wants to go. But it's important, and I'll take extra time to make sure that the team is on board and the team is all, you know. And sometimes, by the way, when I involve the team, I realize that, oh, maybe what I thought was the right way isn't, because the team makes me realize that I've not thought of something. But even when I know where we want to go, it's important that you want the team to get there. You want the team as a whole. And like I said, be open to the idea that maybe what you think will happen won't happen. That's another important thing of leading a team, is allowing the team to, like, actually design the set. And that sometimes what you anticipate isn't going to be what's best once you get the team involved. The other cool thing, let me get into the flip side of it. Where do teams suffer, or what's the, you know, play into the weakness of teams? And that is the lack of unified vision. When you're a solo designer, you know what you want. You don't have to worry about it. On a team, that is not so. And in fact, one of the most important things about a team lead, like the number one job, I believe, of a team lead, is communication. It is your job to communicate, and not just to your team. You need to communicate to everybody downstream. You need to communicate to future teams. Like, if you're the lead of vision, you got to communicate with the lead of set design. That a lot of what you're trying to do is saying, hey, here's what we've done to help set you up for success. Here are the blueprints we've made. You know, and in the handoff documents, and I publish a lot of these, a lot of what you want to do is walk through your thinking with the set designer. We did this for this reason. Here's the things we tried. Here's the realizations we came to. Here are the backup plans if that doesn't work. Here are the different ways you can do this. Sometimes, for example, I like, let's say we come up with a new mechanic and there's like four or five different ways to use it. I like listing all of them. Not the set design will necessarily use all of them, but it's valuable to set design to know what they are and to know the exploration. And so a lot of what you want to do, like a lot of team design, because the weakness of a team is people don't know what other people are thinking, you have to spend a lot of time and energy making sure that is true. You want to spend a lot of time in your team talking about what you want and walking through decisions. Like one of the things, for example, that I'm very big on when I lead teams is I like to make bite-sized things. I like to go, okay, what are the core tenets of what we're doing? What's the emotional center of what we're doing? What is the mechanical heart of what we're doing? Then a lot of what I need to do is I want to consolidate things down to bite-sizable things because that's easier to convey. So for example, when I was working on Theros, I realized that the three things that I wanted, that the three most core essences of Greek mythology were gods, heroes, and monsters. And I think I was in the library and I saw a book named that. I'm like, that is exactly, like I need my three pillars, those are the three pillars. And then I'm like, okay, what's my emotional center? Okay, I think that Greek mythology was very much about adventure. It's about a journey, that you go on a journey and discover who you are. Or, you know, the gods gain in power or the monsters get more powerful. The idea that there's this journey you go on, this is like who you are. And so the idea was, okay, the emotional center is the sense of journey, of an adventure, of exploration, of becoming something. And then my three pillars are gods, heroes, and monsters. Okay, now once we know that, how do gods, what's the journey of a god? What's the journey of a hero? What's the journey of a monster? And then our core mechanics came from that. Devotion came from the journey of a god. Heroic came from the journey of a hero. Monstrosity came from the journey of a monster. And that once you understand the core things, A, it helps you do the design, but also from a team design standpoint, it communicates to your fellow team what you're trying to do. And that is really, really key in group design because people don't know what you're thinking. You know, solo design, you know, one of the things that I do a lot when I do solo design is I do a lot of instinctual things, meaning I don't even know why I want to do it, but it feels right, so I do it. And I'm a very instinctual designer. So one of my challenges has been when you're doing solo design, you have a gut feeling that this, I should do this. My gut says, yeah, then you do it. In a team design, that's tricky, right? Because you want to explain to your team what is going on. And so one of the skills that you have to get better at for team design is you have to get better at understanding why you want to do things. And for me, it was a big challenge. I'm a really instinctual designer. I do things because they feel right. And when you're working by yourself, hey, feels right. You've convinced everybody working on the project that it's good. But when it's a whole team and you got to communicate what you're doing, that's a lot harder. And one of my big challenges in, like, you know, as a magic designer has been getting better at understanding why something's important to me, why something matters. And that a lot of my growth as a designer has been the ability and just learning how to get better at looking within and going, okay, I know I want to do thing X. Why? Why do I want to do thing X? And so that is definitely a skill that's like some of the stuff I'm talking about are team skills. Like another big thing is managing team members. It's a real skill. And it comes from a lot of the points I've already made is you want people to understand their expectation. You want to make sure you're giving people roles and ownership in their roles. And that, oh, another thing that's really important is trust. That not only do you have to have people have their roles and give them responsibilities, but you need to trust them in their role. If someone's job it is to do something, you can't then come back and go, I don't think so. that if someone, if my play designer is making costs, I don't go, I'm going to second guess your costs. You're my play designer. You're doing costs. If you think that's the right cost, I will trust you. And even if someone makes a decision that I'm not sure about, I don't overrule them on that decision because that is their decision to make. But I will, and one of the things that's valuable in teams is one-on-ones. And the reason one-on-ones are important is there's a different dynamic to a group talking than there is to two individuals talking. And the point of that is there's a lot of emotion and ego, and like, there's a lot going on in that. How you look to other people matters to people, you know? And so let's say, for example, I have some criticism that I want to get. Let's say I'm working with my strong second. There's something my strong second does that I'm not happy with. I do not want to do that criticism in the group meeting. Why? Because it is, you know, it makes my strong second look bad. It, you know, it can do a lot of things that it could hurt their feelings. And that if we can get on a one-on-one and I can say, okay, just us, I'm just, you know, I'm here. The reason you're my strong second is we're trying to help you and try to learn. And I think you've made mistakes. So let me walk through why I think you've made a mistake. Here's why I think it's a mistake. Here's what I want that this isn't. You know, I can walk through with them if I think they did something that's not quite what I want. And I can use that as a learning opportunity where we can discuss and we can have a back and forth and that we can use that time. And I'm doing it out. There's no other people involved. There's no other, you know, there's no ego or anything in the sense that they're just learning, but it's not about looking bad in front of other people. You know what I'm saying? And that that dynamic is really important. And so understanding what you want to do in the group and some things you want to do in a group, some things are better in a group. For example, if you want to convince people of things, it's nice to do it in a group because once one person sort of gets swayed, they join and start, you know what I'm saying? Like the key is you want the whole group on board. And so trying to convince individual people one at a time is a lot more work. Now, there's time and places you do that, I guess. But most of the time, if I'm really trying to get the team on board, I want them all together at the same time so that there's back and forth. And once again, maybe if I'm wrong, if what I believe to be right is not true, having the whole team there will bounce and get ideas. And that, oh, that's another important thing of having a team is you definitely want to allocate time for discussions among the team. Team talking time is what I like to call it. That you want to have some amount of time where you can sort of bring things up and people can work through stuff and issues and sort of have the whole team there. The other reason that's really important is sometimes someone has a concern that other people don't know they have or haven't got in their mind, but they hear somebody else say it, they go, oh yeah. And then if you can answer that as the lead, you're answering not just that one person, you're answering all the people. And that is really effective in sort of getting the team. Like a lot of communication is explaining rationale. And sometimes, like I said, you do your best you can to explain the rationale, but sometimes people have questions that really do a good job of digging into things. Sometimes people ask me questions that make me go, okay, let me figure out why something that I haven't quite figured out, but the questions prompt me, which is really good. I'm a big advocate of questions. In general, my rule is questions are great in the team. But if you're wanting to do sort of pointed feedback, that is better on one-on-one. Anyway, what else? Almost done. I'm at work here. Any final thoughts? I think my final thing is just to reinforce that I think that team design has the potential to be super strong. You're playing, like, you're using the advantage of all these different people. Like one of the reasons that Magic is, I think, as great as it is so many people at the top of their game that really are great at what they do are coming together with other people that are really strong at what they do and working together. And that it's so fun to see the finished product, which on some levels is better than any one person could have done. You know, it's so neat to come up with an idea and that inspires the creative team to do something or inspires rules or editing. Like it's fun to see everybody using their strengths and having it all come together. And that is something truly amazing. But the other part of the team is, which is from having done solo design, is you have to appreciate the groupness of it. You know, one of the fun things about doing something by yourself is I did that. Me and only me, you know, I did that. But when you have a group, you did that. We did that. And it's important to understand and like, one of the things I try so hard in my articles and stuff is I want to acknowledge as many people as I can. I always introduce my design teams because I want people to see all the people that were making this thing. That, you know, I want everybody to get their credit. I want everybody, you know, that a team is not an individual. And so that is very key. So anyway, guys, I hope this gave you a good insight into team design. But I'm at work, so we don't know what that means. That means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. I'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.